Once again, this is my pleasure, my great pleasure indeed, to talk to the CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, Nolene Blackwell. Nolene, once again, you are most welcome to Northside today.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Donny, and to be on Near FM. Delighted to be with you.
Nolene, the 7th of November 2019 sees a one-day conference hosted by the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Nolene, tell us what that's all about.
Well, we have a big birthday this year, Donny. Dublin Rape Crisis Centre is 40 years old. It was set up by a bunch of women back in 1979 because they recognised the need for a confidential space and a confidential helpline where people could talk about something which was entirely hidden at the time. And we're recognising that today, in 2019, it was some achievement for them to set it up. It was some achievement to keep the centre going over 40 years. We want to look at that achievement. We want to see where we are now. And we want to see where do we need to go into the future.
Nolene, I'm just thinking there while you're talking that Ireland is some different country now from when it was way back in 1979. And one thing in particular that stands out for me, and I would imagine for you as well, is rape within marriage, 1979 as opposed to 2019.
Absolutely. That is definitely one of the things. When you think back in 1979, when the centre was started, rape couldn't happen within marriage, actually, because if a woman complained she had been raped and a man said, well, she's my wife, he had a total legal, perfect defence to it. It was a full legal defence to anybody claiming rape within the marriage. That wasn't only in Ireland, actually. It was really all over Europe as well. And then in the 80s, people started to say, probably thanks to the kind of discussion that the rape crisis centres and the like were starting all over Europe, people started to say, that can't be right. It can't be right that you can own somebody in that way. But actually, in the 1980s in Ireland, we had a court case that went on where a man sued another man who'd had an affair with his wife. And the judge in that case called a wife a chattel, just like a horse or a cow, just a thing belonging to the husband. And then in 1990, we changed the law and we said, no, rape can happen within marriage and it's no longer a defence for somebody to say, I am that person's husband. But it took another decade. It wasn't until 2001 that the first conviction came through for rape within marriage. So like the 40 years have been an evolution, but it's been a slow enough evolution. And one of the things that I suppose surprises me sometimes is why didn't we move faster? Why is it that today in 2019, there are still some people who are ashamed to say that they were raped? And there are some people who are raping and who are not considered to be committing a crime. So, you know, we still have an awfully long way to go.
Nolene, could I maybe put it to you, and I'm going to come back to this part of the discussion maybe later on, but could I put it to you that maybe if we'll say for argument's sake, God forbid, you're walking down the street today and you get shot, or if you're walking down the street today and you get stabbed, or if you're walking down the street today and you stand in an open drain and break your leg, you can see the injury. You can see you can see the cast, you can see the wound, you can see whatever. But there is, unless you're physically assaulted, as in punched and kicked, etc., during the course of a rape, there is no visible sign. It's a lot maybe like mental illness. There is no outward sign that people can associate with it. So therefore, if you can't see it, it didn't happen and it doesn't exist and we won't talk about it.
That is so very true. And it is then saying, if I can't see your injury, If what you're talking about is the damage to your mind, to your emotions, to your psyche, all of that, if that's the damage, then people are inclined to disregard it. They are inclined not to treat it as seriously. But it is exactly on a par with so much of mental illness as well, that somebody cannot expose it in the way they can expose a physical illness. And as a result of that, there is always that extra kind of understanding that we all have to have. We all have to educate ourselves, really, about the reality of mental illness, about the reality of trauma that actually can make a person, can make that does make a person ill, and we do not accept that as we should.
Nolene, you know, we're talking about a time when the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre was set up, that, God forbid, a poor unfortunate girl who became the victim of rape, and if the rapist was a person of high standing in society, that girl could very well find herself in the Magdalen laundries very, very fast.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, and it is interesting that those were the times, like after the Rape Crisis Centre was set up, that Garda, who said recently that she'd had a child, as a what was then called a ban Garda, she had a child outside of marriage, and she was effectively made to leave the Gardaí in the early 1980s. The same time as a teacher down in County Wexford, Eileen Flynn, who had a child outside of wedlock, was made to leave her teaching job. So, like, even at the level of women who had got into the professions, who seemed to be independent, who did not depend on anyone else, society was still blaming them for the fact that they were pregnant. Now, if they were pregnant and raped and ended up in a Magdalen laundry, there was often a chance that that abuse was happening within the family as well, that that abuse had originated within the family, that that pregnancy had originated within the family. And all of those things, it made much more sense for society in those days to blame the woman. But you know what, Donny, that has been going on since the beginning of time. If you listen to the old biblical stories, the woman forced Adam to eat the apple, and all his woes started from there. So it's just really, it's really built into our system, that sense of woman, the temptress, causing men to engage in activity for which the woman is to blame. And so really what the Rape Crisis Centre did when it started up, it started really on the foot of all of those marches that happened at the time, where women were out on the street saying, we want to reclaim the night. We want to be able to walk wherever we want to walk without fear of physical assault or without fear of sexual assault. We want to be able to wear what we want to wear without being told that we are inducing rape. So those were the kind of things that were happening. There were vicious rapes happening in Dublin where people were, which were not being investigated. So all of those things brought about a sense for women who were at that time looking for their rights across lots of areas. They were looking for their right to work. They were looking for their right to have a family or not. They were looking for a number of social rights at the same time. And at the same time, they said, we really are entitled and we have a right to be free of fear of rape and sexual assault. But when it happened, when these things happened, it was the woman was to blame. That has not gone away. In this day, you will hear in the course of any single week if this topic comes up, but she was asking for it.
Yeah, and I mean, this is what she was wearing, and she was drunk, and she, what did she expect? Was it, what did she expect, actually, is another one you hear a lot of, Noreen.
What did she expect when she was going out like that?
Tell
and
me this.
Girls are taught from when they're very young to make sure that they not only have to mind themselves, but they have to mind predatory men as well, who might attack them, and that they are to blame for that when they're told this is how you dressed or whatever. It was only a couple of years ago, there was a really interesting study that I think you and I discussed before as well, done right across the European Union. And they, in the course of that survey, they surveyed 1,000 Irish people. And they found that in that survey, 21% of the people that they surveyed, which is 210 people, thought that there were some cases where it was okay for a man to have consent, to have non-consensual sex, to not need consent to sex. And amongst the main things were if a woman was drunk or had taken drugs, then the next main thing was if she was wearing provocative clothing, or if she went home with a man. But the one that remains totally shocking, of all of those shocking figures, the one that I find absolutely impossible to understand, is where 7% of those surveyed said that that if a woman was walking alone on a dark road, then it was okay to have sex without consent with her. Now, that's 7%, and it's a small enough percentage, but it's 70 people in Ireland. And I really would like to talk to that 70 people and see what it was they thought that was okay about thinking that you could have non-consensual sex with somebody who was vulnerable because they were walking on a dark road.
The only thing I will say to you, Noeline, is I would imagine that inside the mind of somebody like that is a very, very scary place to be. Noeline, yeah. Can I ask you, in 1979, and you know, the way we're talking here, younger listeners will think that we're back in the 1800s. Like, yeah. 1979 is not that terribly long ago in relative yeah. terms. Was there much opposition to, or if there was, where did it come from, the setting up of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre?
There was, and it continued over time. So there was a good bit of opposition to it. So first of all, the main opposition actually came from the institutions. Neither the law, nor the church, nor the media liked the idea of the Rape Crisis Centre. Now, in fairness, the media gave it a certain amount of good attention when it was being set up, but there was almost immediately a backlash to that. And as far as the church was concerned at the time, there was outrage at the thought that women would be free of any sort of moral blame for being raped. So there was a lot of backlash to the whole idea that men were to be seen as rapists, because it was very much at the time men and women. Women were raped and men did the raping. There was no talk about same-sex relationships at the time, so we didn't have any of those complications in the media. But the backlash was there and the push against it was there. In the Dáil, there were several requests for people like Gemma Hussey, who we hope will be speaking at our conference as well, to stop with her attempts in the Shannon to have legislation to change how rape was described and to improve the law in relation to it. She was definitely considered to be somebody who was out on a limb, not in tune with our society, and damaging to family life. So that was a big problem, because of course the truth was then, and it was probably known then in high places, that much of rape and sexual abuse happened in family places, in church places. This was before the Ferns report, the Ryan report, showed the extent of childhood sexual abuse within religious institutions. So the problem for a lot of people was, if the Rape Crisis Centre was allowed to play a full part, then and was recognised as necessary, then people were going to come forward who said they had been raped and sexually abused, and they then were going to shine lights on where that abuse happened.
And of course, that couldn't be allowed at that time. Yeah. Norlene. Exactly. And I would presume, and I'm trying to work off memory here, that Nell McCafferty would have been a campaigner on the journalistic side for you, for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Obviously, you weren't involved with it at that stage, yeah. but yeah. Nell McCafferty, I would imagine, would have been a huge journalistic plus for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre.
She was. And so all of those, because that was still considered the women's lib, you know, movement, and women's liberation was a thing. And Nell, of course, was reporting with great enthusiasm and with great support. And actually, another person that we hope to speak at the conference is Evelyn Conlon, who was herself a journalist and an author and a pal of Nell's. So she was there as well. So there was all that group of feminist women who were fighting for women's liberation across a wide range of issues, including a whole lot of family issues, which were not popular at the time, including contraception. They were. So we had, at that time, the centre had that support from people who were seen as left-leaning, as women. But at the time as well, those women were called, in certain quarters, including legal quarters, they were called the shrillies, shrill women who you didn't have to listen to carefully because they were hysterical. But yeah, definitely that support was there. And that kind of energy, Donny, was essential. It wouldn't have survived otherwise. I mean, when the centre was announced, the women who were setting it up did not feel confident in giving their names to the press because of the level of abuse and vitriol they would get. And that was way before social media. That wasn't trolling across Twitter. That was just downright threats to them as people for the negative impact that they would be having on life in Ireland.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, you couldn't state plainly that women were being abused. I mean, that was, as you said, I mean, you can even remember, I presume, Norlene, you'd be old enough to remember the marriage vows of olden days, love, honour and obey, you know?
Yeah.
Norlene, yeah. Can I put it to you that in the 40 years since 1979, both of us have seen a lot of changes, and I mean, we have spoken time out a number, and I've lost count of the number of times we've spoken, and every time I thoroughly enjoy talking to you, but I'm just wondering, Norlene, as you sit there now as CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, do you feel that you have progressed, certain aspects of Irish society have progressed, but that some of the pillar institutions, let us call it that for want of a better word, and I'm thinking particularly here, Norlene, of government and maybe the Garda Síochána, that they haven't moved as fast as society or as even the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. And I'll make a particular point here, Norlene. We spoke at length in relation to the aftermath of the Belfast rape trial and legislation that was to be put in place, and it was being talked about, and Charlie Flanagan was going to do the devil and all. And I'm just wondering, Norlene, that must be 2 years ago now. Is that in place? Has anything improved? Have you got more law?
The report hasn't issued yet. That was at the beginning of April 2018. So we're now at the beginning of October. So it's 18 months ago that announcement was made, that Charlie Flanagan was announced that there would be a review of how victims are treated in the legal system. And that report hasn't issued yet. Now, you know, we are hoping that the fact that a report has issued in Northern Ireland, which was excellent, and which identified all of the ways in which victims are isolated and poorly treated in the justice system. It identified all of those and her great recommendations for the future. We're hoping that at least, if nothing else, that the delay that allowed that report to come out first will give extra substance to what comes out. The person who is chairing that review group is writing that report at the moment, and he is a specialist in the area, and his name is Tom O'Malley. So, I mean, we're still told that report is due to come out. So we're still waiting for it. But in terms of speed, Donny, no, the speed, things haven't happened fast enough across a whole lot of areas. So the, even things sometimes have kind of regressed, because 20 years ago, in 2002, we had a really excellent report giving us data on the trends and the prevalence of sexual violence in Ireland. That was to be, should, the recommendation was that that would be repeated every 5 years. If that had happened, we would have a much clearer picture on where the trends are, who the most vulnerable are, what the best remedies are in place. Whereas, in fact, it has not been repeated. A new study has started at the beginning of this year. It won't report until 2022 or 2023 at the earliest, which is a huge period of time. And unless it is repeated regularly, we still won't know how to deal with things. So we still lack decent information on the extent of sexual violence in Ireland. We still lack a justice system and a health system that understand the harm that is done by sexual violence. I would say that, in fact, and I'll give a shout out to the guards here, the Gardaí have been to the forerunners in identifying the need to deal differently with the victims of sexual violence, because you can't treat it, as you say, in the same way as you know, a stolen car or something like that. So that they have done their bit. The legal system has an awfully long way to go in order to be receptive to the rights of people who are raped and sexually abused. The health system, we're bursting at the seams right now. We have, we're recruiting new roles at the moment, because the need was never bigger, and still, like, the resources needed to help people to heal just haven't kept pace with the explosion in the need. And then at the other side of it, our society has a lot to do yet to be supportive of people who are raped and sexually abused, to be not supportive of those who carry out sexual harassment, sexual assault, including rape. And we have to do an awful lot more with our young people. We have to give them an understanding of what consent looks like, what healthy relationships look like. And that will happen in some schools and not in others. And for the children we don't give that to, we're letting them down badly.
Yeah, we're going to fail another generation. So, and by the sounds of what you're telling me, Nolene, 2019 is the 40th anniversary. We'll be talking at the 50th anniversary, and nothing much will have changed if we're waiting on politicians to get their act together and come up to speed. Nolene,
just on that though, I do think in the last few years, because society, and particularly because young people have said enough is enough, I do think there's much more talk about it, much more recognition amongst young adults and young people in particular, but all of us. Yeah, of a society where it just simply isn't good enough to go on with the way we were going on and allowing the abuse.
Nolene, the day itself in question is taking place on the 17th, yes?
7th of November.
7th,
Thursday,
sorry.
The 7th of November. And it's going to take place in the Royal College of Surgeons on St. Stephen's Green, which is a nice link for us, because Professor Hannah McGee, who is the Dean of Medicine there, was the person who did that prevalence report back in 2002 in conjunction with the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. And they're very kindly giving us the use of the hall, as they say. So they're giving us their hall for the day. And if anyone is interested in going, Donny, there is a small charge, but the event is up on Eventbrite, and people can book tickets there. It's €25 for tickets, but for people with concessions, it's €10. And that would include students, anybody on limited incomes or whatever. And we're hoping to kind of cover the cost of lunch and things like that with the fee. But we'd love to see people there. We'd love to see people who are affected themselves by sexual violence. We'd love to see people who have solutions. We'd love to see people who are interested in the history or in what's going on at the moment. We'd love to see, you know, people who are engaged with young people or who just want a better society. We'd love to see everyone at it.
And if you have been affected by any of the issues that Noeline and myself have spoken about, you can contact the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre on a national helpline of 1-800-77-8888. That's 1-800-77-8888, and that's open 24 hours per day. Noeline Blackwell, CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. As always, Noeline, it has been another pleasure and a privilege, and thank you so much for your time.
And the same to you, Donny. Thank you very much indeed. A pleasure to talk to you.
Bye-bye now, and thank you.
Bye-bye.